Siren Radio.
Excellent. That's what we like to hear. And as Gabriella Peralta is doing other things in Gibraltar at present, and obviously we've already heard we've got Stephanie in Exeter, before we actually go to find out the weather for Lincoln from Los Angeles, we have to formally welcome two newbies to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. First of all, the fabulous Gemma King. How are you, Gemma?
Hi, I'm good, thank you.
And Gemma, your official role within the Linkage Agricultural Society is what?
Marketing executive at the showground.
Marketing executive at the showground. Reasons why Phil should actually have his honeymoon at the Lincolnshire Showground will be forthcoming over the next 15 minutes or so. Over to our next newbie, that's Emma Haig.
Hello.
Your first time as well, Emma?
Yes.
Excited?
Very.
Marvellous, that's all right to hear. And because he's become a seasoned professional over the last few weeks, Christian Arkabovic, how are you, Christian?
Hello, I'm good, thank you.
Wonderful, but also your first ever Lincolnshire show.
Yeah, it is, I'm looking forward to it.
Astounding. But before, as I say, we go to find out some wonderful info about sleep and calming down and really from the best ever so. I mean, last week, Christian, as you know, we featured a piece on aromatherapy with a couple of other folk who tried desperately to fulfil the skills of Stephanie Romaszewski, which wasn't the same, was it? It wasn't, you know, I even mentioned Stephanie during the interview. I thought, come on, guys, you know, give me some more. let's move first and foremost to Phil. Would you like to share with us, as Tessa Snart arrives in the studio, what the weather forecast for Lincoln is going to be from your perspective at 3.5 minutes past midnight in Los Angeles?
Well, honestly, the weather for Lincoln is shaping up to be a lot like what the weather was in Los Angeles, believe it or not. You're looking at temperatures peaking in the high teens with, scattered clouds, but with the sun peeking through occasionally. And more of the same as you head into the weekend. That's what it looks like to me. And that's very much what we had here in Los Angeles. Though, as you are looking at rain and rather chilly temperatures next week, we are looking at blistering sunshine and temperatures hitting 30 degrees.
Well, there we have it. The message is there. We shall continue regardless with respect to that because we're British, aren't we, Stephanie? We continue. That's important. By the way, what's the weather like in Exeter?
It's all right. It's a bit overcast. I'm hoping the sun peaks out at some point.
It will. Don't worry.
Yeah.
I tell you what, we're going to just move a couple of people around. Tessa, if you'd like to move around this way, I'll plug you into this sort of zone of things, etc. This is going to be a bit of deconstruction. Phil, your chance to really ask Stephanie now. Because I know I've said to you over the years, Phil Leonis, that one of the challenges you have with respect to sleep is too much caffeine. And I know you think, I can't start without the caffeine, etc. But here's the opportunity to actually speak with Channel 4's very own sleep doctor. And effectively, the all-round wondrous soul who kind of connects in so many wonderful ways everything to do about sleep, including advising NASA astronauts. And let's face it, which American university did you also do some of your research in, Stephanie?
It was Harvard.
Harvard, exactly. So she knows her stuff. So Phil, chance to have a brief chat with Stephanie and put that connection between Los Angeles, Exeter and Lincoln to good use.
Somehow, the way that you put it reminded me of the question that was once asked of Dean Martin when somebody, I think it was Sinatra, said to him, Dean, I want to talk to you about your drinking. And Dean Martin responded, what happened? Did I miss a round? And so it's such a beginner's relationship to coffee to think, Alex, that I drink coffee to get myself started. I drink the coffee to get myself started, to keep myself going, to wind down, to make sure that I can sleep. I sleep with soundly, sleep like a baby, with a pound of fresh French roast beans under my pillow at night. And I always keep an IV drip of coffee black as midnight on a moonless night standing by during the middle of that night, just in case.
Is that good news? Or are you just speechless, Stephanie? Because, I would just say, whoa.
It's really actually, do you know what? What you've just highlighted is that most people don't think it affects the architecture of their sleep. So often if people feel that sleep, sort of coffee before bed doesn't really affect them, they're missing out on the most important thing about sleep, which is the quality. So we're so obsessed with duration and just being able to sleep that we don't think anything about whether it's important to have a good quality. And unfortunately, caffeine does disrupt the quality. And when people have been drinking coffee for a very long time, it's almost like they've forgotten what it feels like to wake up feeling refreshed and like that sleep has actually, you know, renewed them for the next day. Instead, they wake up super groggy, like obsessed with getting their next fix, i.e. coffee, so that they can feel a bit more awake.
I hate to quote Dean Martin, but I feel much like he did when he said, you know, that the problem he had with people who didn't drink was that when they woke up in the morning, that was the best they were going to feel all day. You know, that's the thing, is that I have at times in my life gone years between cups of coffee, and now I'm making up for it. but you're so right. It's just what becomes very interesting when one works in a profession, especially where you're constantly having to reconfigure what is a normal sleep schedule. I mean, my circadian, you remember how we learned that those Chilean miners who were trapped, and we learned from monitoring them that it turns out human beings, a cycle is not 24 hours, it's 26 hours. And as a filmmaker, you wish that you had 26 hour cycles, because it's, guess what? This week we're working all nights and we're sleeping. Oh. We're Bedouins. We're sleeping during the day. Yeah. So that is so true, though. That's it, is that you get into these and so you try to approximate, well, what would normal be? Yes, other people around me may be going to bed many hours before me, but what is normal, and how am I making sure that I'm still taking care of myself, especially in terms of the kind of the rituals that go along with leading into good sleep. And you know what's interesting is actually one of the biggest plagues for me with the really good quality sleep is if I'm so exhausted that I just go to bed without doing those things that take care of me first.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, oh, I'm exhausted. I could go to sleep right away. And indeed, I do go to sleep right away. But then I'm likely to wake up with a migraine or something in the morning because I haven't fully relaxed and integrated that relaxation into my body, into my mind evenly.
Yeah. I think also a bit like smoking, coffee is such a big economy right now. So we're not in the right place to, you know, I wonder if in 20 years we'll be talking about coffee the way that we now talk about smoking.
Exactly. Ban it now. Don't drink coffee in public, for goodness sakes. Yeah.
But it's so strange, isn't it? Like, you know, you were saying at the beginning about, you know, having a drip to go to bed, using it to relax. And it might be an exaggeration, but actually people do that. People literally use it for everything because it is ingrained into our society. A bit like how we ingrain the fact that lying in is a luxury, that we should, you know, lying in is an indulgement, and that actually we all do it at the weekends because it's you know, everyone's doing it, and of course I'd rather be in bed. But it's funny because we're all going on also in our social media accounts about, you know, being up and seizing the day.
Stephanie, we need to have an Autobot to actually do those social media accounts whilst we're sleeping. Can I just bring in three other fine folk in the studio? Emma, I mean, clearly you'd get no rest whatsoever at the Lincolnshire Show, particularly in the build-up to the show on the 20th, 21st of June, particularly with its 100th anniversary of the RAF and so on. But do you have any challenges with respect to the notion of sleep and so on?
Not really. I think I sleep quite well. But that's not to say we aren't busy at the minute with the show and everything.
So it's the sleep of the just, basically, from that point of view. Gemma?
No, I think I sleep quite well as well. But we do have to get up really early on show day, so that might be a bit of a struggle.
Okay. Tessa, you've just wrapped up your... almost wrapped up. You have wrapped up your undergraduate study, so it's all sorted out now.
Yes.
It's all it's blended, which is marvellous. You're listening in to Phil and Stephanie there. Any thoughts from yourself?
Well, I'm an awful sleeper.
Right. You need Stephanie's help.
Yeah,
it's
coming, don't worry. Like, it's broken. Every hour I'll wake up sometimes. It's really frustrating. I've got one of them minds that just, it doesn't shut down. It's constantly thinking, and it's always worse at night, as they always say. So do you have any tips for that?
Yeah, I mean, so many. But one really small tip If you really are struggling, and I'm assuming that you have tried a certain amount of things, because there's loads of stuff out there at the moment, isn't there, and all talking about mindfulness and trying to relax in all different ways. But something really, really simple, if you just really need to distract yourself, is if you repeat the word "the" over and over again. So if every time you breathe out, you were just to say the word "the," maybe in your head or out loud if you don't, if you're not going to be interrupting anyone else. What it is it's a neutral word. So it's very hard to associate anything with the word "the." It's much harder to associate something with it than maybe counting sheep or counting backwards. And also the area of your brain that sort of creates speech and thought is a bit of a bottleneck area. So essentially, when you're trying to say "the," it's quite hard to generate thoughts at the same time. And what you might notice is, oh, I've started thinking again, it's not working, but I bet you any money it's because you've stopped saying the word "the." So it's a very, very simple tool. But for someone who really is just, you know, so annoyed with their own thoughts, like, oh my God, it's just ridiculous, it's completely pointless, it's not working for me right now, then saying the word "that" might be helpful. But the biggest thing I could ever tell you is that relaxation on its own will never help you sleep if you don't have the sleep drive there to start with. So if you're not physically sleepy, it's very different from being fatigued and being exhausted from the day and feeling like you need to rest. Sleepiness is literally the ability to not keep your eyes open. That is what you need in order to sleep. So you need that first. And if you haven't got that, you need to go away from the bedroom and get a better quality wake time, even if it means staying up a bit later. Then try your relaxation or saying the word "the" over and over if you can't switch your mind off. But you've got to have a sleep drive first.
Oh, okay, that's really, really interesting. I'm going to try that. I'll see if that helps. Thank you.
That's all right.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant, Stephanie. Is that the reason why, you know, I was into my 30s before I gave myself permission to actually be a napper? And also I waited until I had a corporate job where I was basically being paid to take a nap in my office. But I would find that at a certain time on certain afternoons, especially dependent on like what creative work I was working on, there would be these times where I literally was getting so sleepy that I couldn't keep my eyes open. And I finally gave myself permission, you know what? Then nap, take a nap. And it would be so refreshing. And when I would wake up from that nap, I mean, the work that I would do would be profoundly better than what I was trying to struggle through beforehand.
So that's really good. And it really just depends on what your goals are. So napping is fine as long as either your quality of your sleep at night isn't impaired, because obviously if you're napping during the day but you're not used to napping during the day, then you're going to change your routine slightly, your cycle. Your brain's going to be like, oh, he wants to nap during the day, so I'm going to make him sleepy so that he wants to nap during the day. So you create a habitual issue there, and that's fine as long as your goals and your expectations aren't that you're going to have 8 hours of solid sleep at night as well. If you can get both, fantastic, but most people can't get that expectation, that thing that they want, which seems to be in our society around 8 hours of really good quality sleep and feel sleepy during the day and nap. Usually a nap is a sign that you're not fixing the bigger problem, which is the quality of your sleep at night. However, napping is a really good short-term solution. I just worry about when people talk about it as a consistent long-term solution, because it is just perpetuating the problem at night.
Again, superb stuff. Tessa, it's time for you to throw those last two questions to Stephanie. Again, that's the reason she's a regular in so many ways.
It's interesting, isn't it?
It's really essential. Is, yeah. A whole series there, and I've finally managed to connect Leonis and Romashevsky, which I feel as though it's been a mission for the last few weeks, really. Anyway, carry on.
Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this morning?
Yes, absolutely. It's been great.
That's good. And will you be returning to the show soon?
Yeah, as long as you'll have me.
Absolutely, Stephanie Romashevsky. We will return, which is brilliant stuff. For that, I feel you're staying with us. Excellent stuff there. We're going to find out more about the Linkages Show 2018, the 20th and 21st of June. We've also got Richard Fitzwilliams and a heap of other material as well coming through. I feel as always the Linkages Show celebrates the beginning of summer. So
feel the sunlight on my face. Will I just close my eyes in a trance? We footpath to my daddy's summer place, where I spent my early summer days, digging for dreams to get through the day with. Begging for wings to fly away with. Ooh, yeah, gave your love to me, and I remember.
Please note, Tessa, that we just spotted Holly McGrattan a few moments ago. Sorry, she's gone now. She's out there. Phil Linus has said he stepped away from the microphone for a moment. Hope to be back by the end of David Cassidy. Okay, how you could actually step away from David Cassidy, I really don't know with respect to summer days. But anyway, let us move on to the Lincolnshire Show 2018 with, of course, Emma Haig and Gemma King. Who would like to actually share the passion for the Lincolnshire Show with, indeed, our ace filmic correspondent and royal correspondent and person who insisted this morning that we really should have actually set the studio up to actually spray paint at all the midweek drivettes? As in,
I did indeed.
Yeah, exactly. That's Richard Fitzwilliam, somewhere you just go all over the place with craziness, etc. But before we find out about McQueen and Paris and Jeanne Pham, the Lincolnshire Show, please. Gemma, would you like to talk us through some bits and pieces here?
Yeah, so this year it's the 134th Lincolnshire Show, mm-hmm. On the 20th and 21st of June. We've got a huge RAF 100 theme this year, so the aviation zone is just huge. We've got sort of an array of aviation-themed activities. We've got replica Red Arrow, cockpits, aviation heritage stands. We've got a visit from the RAF Falcons as well on both days.
It's just an awesome event. Yeah. And astoundingly, Christian Arkabovitz from, is it Wakefield, or have I got that wrong?
No, yeah.
It is Wakefield, a place as glamorous as Beverly Hills.
Yeah, some would say, yeah.
You wait until I get Phil Linus to do the jingle for you, I'll tell you. By the way, are you back, Phil?
I am back. I'm enjoying listening to all the excitement going on at the Lincolnshire Show.
Exactly. Because one, I mean, I suggested, perhaps half in jest, but that you know, maybe it's where Phil Linus and Lily Holloman, when they finally tie the knot, should actually honeymoon in Lincolnshire, you know? I mean, it's got to be a sort of line from that point. He did actually seriously talk a few years ago about coming to the Christmas market. I said, forget the Christmas market, you know, go to the Lincolnshire Show. Isn't that right, Gemma?
Emma.
Emma, I'm getting confused now. So, right, we are Emma and Gemma. Thank you, yes.
Yes, that is correct. We're very excited for the show. It's definitely a celebration of everything Lincolnshire. So this year we've got
various different bars coming to the show. So the Curiosity Shop are having quite a big presence with us this year.
And as we featured on the show last night, and Phil will attest to this because he heard her perform live, we've also got a celebrity reporter working for our social media team who's also performing on stage in Chloe Rose.
Excellent.
Yeah, so cool. That's a work to do. Tessa, you've been a pretty regular at the Lincolnshire Show. This has been your third one, I think, in terms of all season from that point of view. Would you endorse, well, in fact, you've probably done more shows than Emma and Gemma, actually, from that
really?
Point of view. They're relative. Oh, really? Yes, so yeah. By the way, hello to Sally Monday. Just want to give her a shout out
hello,
there.
Sally. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, you know, Christian was devastated when she saw you couldn't actually make it to the studio, but it's okay. Aww. It's good stuff on that line of things. And hello to Jane Southall.
Yes.
Done our little routines there. So why should Richard, possibly considering, well, Paris, yes, Berlin, yes, Madrid, fine, Lincolnshire Show, you know, why should Richard, or indeed Phil Lyons, why should they actually, you know, from your own perspective, as a reporter and correspondent?
Because there's so much going on at the Lincolnshire Show, and if you really want to get a feel for English heritage as well, I think that's good. All of the animals, of course. He has a cat, Fuzz, so I think you would like that. And every year I think you add something new, don't you? So that there'll be surprises, so it's always different as well.
A true celebration of all things great about Lincolnshire. Yes. Has that sold it to you, Richard, or is it a case of, no, I'm going to go to Royal Ascot again, as I usually do?
Well, I mean, I think both. Undoubtedly both. It certainly sold it, but of course I wouldn't. I mean, leaving London at the moment has been all but impossible. I managed to get a few days in Paris, but this was after the Royal Baby, the Royal Society of Portrait Painters, and the Royal Wedding.
Busy life. Anyway.
And coming up, the honours, Queen's Birthday honours, Trooping the Colour, and Royal Ascot, as you say.
And as it was released publicly, because indeed she was born in South Africa, we can also echo the congratulations of the world for our Vice-Chancellor of the University of Lincoln, who has achieved CBE, Sir Professor Mary Stewart. Great stuff there. Very good. Anyway, Richard's got very quiet. He's also born in South Africa. I don't know whether they actually encountered, but it just shows that connection. You were destined to actually connect with Siren Radio at the University of Lincoln, just as indeed our Vice-Chancellor. Obviously, it's
I'm destined to settle in London, which was,
the... Strange but true. Phil, would you like to know what two movies we're going to be sharing with the audience, courtesy of Richard, this morning?
I would love to know what two films.
Take it away, Richard. Do you want to go to the fashion line? Do you want to go to the spraying paint? Or do you want to go to Jeune Femme?
I just want, before, just to mention McQueen and also Jeune Femme, which we will be discussing. I just wanted to put in one brief recommendation, because having been to Paris, if anyone is going, there is an extraordinary exhibition of Delacroix at the Louvre. I mean, I realize the French, there weren't any queues for this because the French are accustomed to exhibitions of this remarkable artist, but really, I have to say, I mean, Liberty Leading the People, the massacres at Chios, these are great works, but I had no idea, I have to say, that he was such a prolific landscape and flower painter, that he was so versatile. And it's so interesting because, I mean, to be born in 1798 until his death in 1863, to think of the seismic changes in French society at that, putting it mildly, with Napoleon and subsequent revolutions and so forth, and the way he sought glory, and he certainly produced it in these extraordinary canvases. I mean, it's just quite literally, when one talks about Delacroix, you see these lions and various in the hunt sequences and so on. There was extraordinary movement, especially in the North African canvases. It's quite amazing. I really recommend that. And there was a very interesting exhibition, Tintoretto's, at the Luxembourg Palace, which is the Senate. Really, really impressive portraits. A religious painter, and one has to say, I'm not the most intrigued by religious paintings on the whole, but there's one of the Conversion of St. Paul where quite literally he has the whole universe turning upside down in a canvas, which really is extraordinary, and there's some very, very fine portraits. And also, I finally succeeded in getting into the Hotel de Ville, and there was an exhibition of photographs by Gilles Caron, which chronicled 1968 and the student riots, and also amazing close-ups of de Gaulle and the way he captured the exhaustion of this rather iconic figure. I mean, it really, really was fascinating to go around Paris. Indeed, to see even obscure exhibitions such as Wild Souls, Symbolism in the Baltic.
I noticed, Richard, that Tessa Snart has also been liking some of your adventures in Paradise, Paris, exactly. A whole range of things, but particularly the one on June the 3rd, Playing with a Masterpiece, depicting a visit by King Juan Carlos to see Guernica the painting at the Picasso Museum in Paris.
So this is one of these marvellously jokey touches to an exhibition which detailed the extraordinary creativity and the process with which Picasso approached Guernica and the various sketches and also reproductions. I've seen the original many times. And there was this glorious satire on the wall called The Visit, a character, obviously, of the painting. It was obviously King Juan Carlos visiting, as it were, about to see what he thought was going to be the original. And in fact, the painting comes alive and parts of it start moving around the floor. I mean, that really, hilarious.
Like,
it's quite clever the way an exhibition totally devoted to this absolutely iconic work. And you have works by a couple of other artists just included. And really, really an effective show, I have to say. I mean, literally the sirens sounding throughout the building to give you an idea of perhaps what
it sounds a bit like stepping into the subconscious mind of Phil Lynas when he's in one of his creative urges.
Well, you know, that was what I was thinking of when I made that post.
Or indeed Tessa when she's saying the.
That is going to be me now. I am going to try that.
Exactly. See?
If in Paris, see the Guernica exhibition at the Picasso Museum. The Delacroix at the Louvre is an absolute must, too. I have to say, Wild Soul Symbolism in the Baltic States, I was totally ignorant of the last century in Latvia.
That's perfect. Okay, let's just do a quick straw poll. Christian, would you be checking out this exhibition? Does it appeal to yourself?
In Paris? If I ever get the chance to go to Paris,
we'll get that sorted out. I'm sure.
If you're paying for the plane flights and everything, I'd definitely take you. Yeah.
Excellent. And Gemma?
Yeah, definitely. I love Paris.
Mm-hmm. Who doesn't?
Is it Gemma or is it Emma? I thought it was Emma.
There's two.
We have Gemma King and Emma Haig. I know it's challenging.
Now,
yeah.
Oh, Lord. Now that's going to keep me up all night.
And Emma.
I would love to visit Paris to see this exhibition.
Okay. Sorted through that. So it's thumbs up from that particular routine, which is great. Okay, whilst Phil is still conscious, because we need to progress onwards with this, let's move to movies.
It's a documentary, and it really, really is extraordinary. The co-directors, Ian Bonhote and Peter Etigue, they've created this mesmerizing portrait of a fashion genius. I mean, having covered London Fashion Week for some years ago, I could never get into one of McQueen's shows because he didn't approve of international who's who. He was an iconoclast, but he did mildly, and that was the part of his greatness. The problem here, of course, we spent 2 hours in the company of a genius, but his fateful fusion of his life and art created a kaleidoscope that I can only describe as part heaven and part hell. I mean, this was an amazing figure, a meteoric rise from humble East End roots to be one of the iconic figures in the cultural renaissance in Britain beginning in the 1990s. We see a lot of footage of McQueen himself, and the strength of this documentary is such well-chosen and skillfully edited interviews with his family, his lovers, his associates, and his models, divided into 5 segments, linked to his most influential shows, and that from everything from Jack the Ripper Stalks His Victims, which was one of his first top shows, to an amazing, just to give you an example of his creativity, a show called Voss, whereby for a whole hour, seated, all those fashionistas watched themselves, a giant glass reflecting box in the center of the catwalk, which crashed open, butterflies flew out, and there was a naked model within it. I mean, he was outrageous. He was the ultimate iconoclast, epitomized by his famous or infamous Bumster trousers. And I mean, I asked Alex if there were robots spraying paint and was very disappointed that, in fact, yeah. the studio seems to be.
Sorry to let you down, but it was Gemma and Emma's first show, and I thought, if I give them robots spraying paint as well, they think, well, just whoa, let's get back to the office. Sally, what have you put us in for?
Well, I mean, he had robots spraying paint, assorting, so to speak, a supermodel. And another extraordinary show, I mean, one can't mention them all. I saw Savage Beauty, as record audiences did in America and in the Victoria and Albert Museum. He used fiery torches on one occasion, and the stage caught alight. What was McQueen's decision? Let it burn, of course. That included cars outside and so forth. I mean, he was like no other.
It's not going to go down well on the Lincolnshire show, I wouldn't have thought, really, you know, in the event of that. You know, just let the
No.
Exactly.
Creative director of Givenchy and Gucci, but tragically, his links, and also I knew her quite well, Isabella Blow, who was the gloriously eccentric and enchanting magazine editor who was discovered McQueen and was also one of his muses. She took her own life very, very tragically. McQueen did as well. The pressures of fame took an enormous toll upon him. And here you are constantly reminded of Images of Mortality with a skull, which is one of McQueen's trademarks. Very often it's a gilded skull and there are painted butterflies that move in and out of it. It's disturbing. It's meant to. I mean, this was... All I can say is that McQueen had this unique combination of brilliance and perversity, and this is a 5 stars... for this documentary, because it is absolutely superb. It's 2 hours. It rivets.
Okay, quickly, Tessa, thoughts as a fashion show? Would you be checking out the documentary McQueen?
Definitely. I mean, I love documentaries anyway, so and it's good to learn new things, I think, and about new people. So, yes, definitely.
Okay, Christian?
Yeah, definitely give it a watch. I mean, I've never heard of the man before.
Well, you see, that's what Richard brings to us.
Yeah, from the review, yeah.
Gemma?
Yeah, I like documentaries as well, so.
And Emma?
Well, after that review, I'll definitely give it a watch.
That's why, you see, Richard, you've done your duty. But, as we've said before, sometimes the whole thing can collapse completely when we go over to our Ace Los Angeles correspondent and say, Phil Leonis, will you be checking it as a documentary maker yourself, of course? The truth is out there. Ancient Mysteries, coming soon. What will you be making of McQueen? Will it be on your list of things to check out?
Well, I love not only making documentaries, but I am a huge fan of documentaries. And even more than that, I am quite the fashionista. I love my stories about fashion. And I would point out, I would expect nothing less than a 5-star review from Richard, because it would be downright anti-royal for him to give a lesser review to a film that has Queen in the title.
I love it.
See what I did there? Sorted through. Next one, Richard.
Jean Femme, this is, in fact, I would say there's any excuse to bring in Greta Gerwig, and I know Phil and I have a 10 dress for Greta Gerwig. I think I'm correct, am I not?
I'm not even sure I understood the words that you said, but you are usually correct, so I will... abide by what you said.
It's Greta Gerwig. I was bringing in Frances Ha, which is a hilarious portrait of a failure, and this movie is very, very similar, but set in Paris. Letitia Dosh plays Paula, and we see someone who's infuriating, someone who's difficult, someone who's rude, someone who's in the verge of turning 30, and returning to Paris and finding her relationship breaks up, and we see her first, obviously deeply troubled, battering at her ex-partner's home at the door, and he won't let her in, and she's turned her mother into something of an enemy, and what will she make with her life? What, in fact, can she achieve? The fascinating aspect of this is the excellence of the performances, and also having just been to Paris, and this is, in fact, a love letter to the city, because we see so many of the sights and sounds of Paris. Visually, it's adept, and also there's this glorious central performance by Letitia Dosh as Paula. She did well at Cannes, and this was a camera door for director Leonore Serrail, for a movie that is very intriguing because it's a portrait of a drifter, someone who can never quite get it together, working in a cafe. The Suleiman Say and Dai as Osman, the manager, is extremely good. And there is, of course, her former partner, Joachim, played by Gregoire Massenjean. This is a movie that has a certain charm. It has a cultural sense, and also it's a central character who's hard to pin down. He drifts in and out of people's lives. She's not got a proper job. She's not got real prospects, and yet she lives in hope somehow and draws in our sympathy. And I did remember Greta Gerwig in roles like this and in Frances Ha and Mistress America, because I find her so irresistible. And the characters here are fascinating. And it's often extremely funny, and it's often very touching, and it has shocking elements too. So I recommend it as one of those unusual films that the French produce and do so well. I mean, the French, of course, taking cinema so seriously. I only realized recently that when a film is released in France, it has to be 3 years before it can be seen online, and they're thinking of making
Richard, that's only because the Nazis invaded in the Second World War, and effectively they were deprived of Hollywood product for such a period of 6 years that when it came back, they consumed it all with a vengeance, and suddenly you had the likes of Truffaut developing Cahiers du Cinéma and actually writing about it. That's all. I mean, just a fairly trivial sort of approach to that.
Well, I have to say, having seen Truffaut photographed by Gilles Caron at the Hotel de Ville, I mean, this is bringing back Truffaut. Godard, of course, still with us.
Indeed.
You know, and Chabrol, I mean, great filmmakers.
The question the world awaits, though, is filled in as, will you just change the title to Young Woman and do an American remake of Jeune Femme?
Oh, my goodness. Now you've opened up a can of worms. I was actually involved in a remake of a Chabrol film back when I was a distribution and international sales executive.
Which one?
It was La Femme Infidèle, which was
Unfaithful Wife. No, that's excellent.
Produced,
yes,
as Unfaithful. Sure, I guess it was excellent. I prefer the original. but we represented, yes, as a distribution executive. I was managing director for a consortium of Europe-based distribution companies here in America, and we had many of the classic Chabrol titles. Though, of course, I would prefer to go to the Lincolnshire show.
Nice. Oh, good heavens. Did you, an admirer, I take it, of the Bonheur, the Boucher, Blood Wedding, Just Before Nightfall. I mean, Chabrol was a master, wasn't he? And creating, the way he dissected the middle class with these situations often over
forensic.
Meals.
It was forensic.
Wonderful,
Richard.
Wonderful.
That's the key thing.
Now, Alex, do we have time for me to ask a question of Richard?
Go on. What the hey? Okay. You deserve it.
Well, I've been dying to ask this because over the past week or so, this has been very big news here in America.
And you are going to talk about a fraud and an imposter,
yes,
are you not?
Yes, Thomas Mace Archer Mills, the phony royal expert who got great acclaim, at least here in the U.S., and had the amount of television exposure second only to you.
Well,
and
I have to tell you, firstly,
I find it not coincidental that as soon as you go to Paris, this fraud tries to usurp your throne.
Well, you know, I have to tell you an amusing story. You know the Jim Jeffries show?
Yes.
Well, in fact, Ingrid Seward, the editor of Majesty, and I were on this. Somewhat unconventional host, I have to say. You can find it online, and it is rather funny, with this Thomas Mace Archer Mills, and we know was in fact Tommy from New York, and it's got a story that's gone viral, as you know. It just so happened that I think it was that caused the Wall Street Journal to take, shall we say, an interest in Mr. Mozzarella's background, and it turned out that he'd changed his name and he'd also acquired grandparents and so forth. I mean, it has been an extraordinary story because, funnily enough, I heard from the Wall Street Journal. It was just a question about names as to whether or how usual it was to have a triple-barreled name, and I didn't know the background or indeed what they were going to print. And I did discover Twistleton Wickham Fines, and then subsequently one with three hyphens, which had been used in the war, Plunkett Early Drax, was a British minister in 1939 with that name. And then, of course, I realized what was happening when someone emailed me when I was in Paris this absolutely bizarre story, which, as I say, you're quite right, it's gone viral. I mean, I did a piece on talk radio about it, and obviously I was asked,
did I have a message
for this character? And my message was not to him, whom I had absolutely nothing to say, but my message was to the media, because we've had characters before who are, shall we say,
fake,
unusual.
Fake news?
Well, fake news. I mean, the thing was, why use somebody like that? I mean, my message to the media is, before you use, I've been on television with him a couple of 3 years before, if you use someone, you should make sure that their background is, shall we say, appropriate. And that is basically the message that people should take away from this. Because there was, when I edited International Who's Who, I can't tell you the problems. I mean, there was a character called Ernest Kay who produced the International Biographical Series in Cambridge, and the only reason that those books existed was that he chose people out of the telephone directory who shouldn't be in any such
It's book. A way many radio stations have actually guaranteed audience inputs. I won't say anything else from that point of view, apart from quoting from the wonderful Thomas Mace Archer Mills himself, what matters most to him, apparently, is to feel and live like a Brit.
Yes, I know, and he gave Meghan advice before she married. I mean, I have to ask, Phil, tell me how you responded, your laughter, when you heard the story.
Well, I first thought about you, actually, and I...
Is Richard Fitzwilliams real, or is he fake?
Where's your faith? No.
Everybody's real.
Of course. Richard is only fake in the best say. He's only the right amount of fake. And that's mostly that's mostly when he has to put up with you, Alex. But I was really curious about, your feelings about it. And I would imagine that your paths had crossed.
Oh, only twice. Yeah, they had crossed twice. And, I mean, it is just an extraordinary story, and it's shone the spotlight onto who you call a royal commentator and how people can... I mean, it's head of the Monarchist League, and if you look online, you'll find all sorts of strange material.
You underscored, really, the theme that is the takeaway, which is media. Why would you put this person on if they did not have the background to make them an expert? But then again... look at who we're electing into office.
You're quite right there. Mind you, I ought to just make one point, and that is his name was Thomas Mates, the name he adopted, was actually this, because when I was on the Jim Jeffries show with him, I saw him where he wore a medal, which was something that was extraordinary, and, you know, I just thought he was somewhat of a caricature and comic figure. I had absolutely no idea.
Like Boris Johnson.
Somewhat different, because his name actually is Thomas Mace hyphen Archer hyphen Mills Esquire. Mm. That's part of the name, apparently.
From the good city of Londinium.
Who the earth uses Esquire these days? I mean, it's just ridiculous.
I mean, Christian Arkabovitz Esquire. I mean, are you shocked by this as a journalism student that actually they've reached this level of fakeness coming through?
I'm still trying to wrap my head around it. He basically faked his way up to the top. Is that essentially what he'd done?
Essentially, that is what was revealed. His attitude was that he felt English, so he became English.
Exactly.
And he was used. But I do have to make one point to Phil. The press, obviously, you can understand how this is done. But the Washington Post, for example, had a headline that he dominated royal coverage. He was on a few stations. He most certainly didn't dominate royal coverage.
Quite right, too, Richard. He hasn't been on Siren Radio's Midweek Drive Morning Edition. So end of. Okay. We have a certificate of authenticity guaranteeing the validity of each and every one of our guests and the verisimilitude, and we can guarantee that both Gemma King and Emma Haig authentically work for the Linkage Agriculture Society, isn't that right?
That is correct.
Definitely.
Fantastic.
I can assure Phil that the Wall Street Journal digging that up caused, I mean, if you actually Google it online, it's just extraordinary. They were laughing in Australia.
Well, if they're laughing in Australia, it's a strange world indeed, particularly as we go to New Zealand tomorrow to talk with Michaela Strachan and how we should save the Kiwi. Tessa, that's a cue for your good self to ask the two questions to both Richard and Phil, please, because Ian Lennox awaits and we need to have a golden dreams moment, or indeed a lungs moment, I think, from Chloe Rose.
Okay. Have you both enjoyed your telephonic link this morning?
Yes, I always do, and especially when Phil is able to join us.
And Phil, have you?
What was not to enjoy? I mean, we art in Paris, fashion documentaries, the exposure of media fakes, everything. I love all of it, and I'm looking forward to next week when by which point, Richard, I will have finally seen Let the Sun Shine In.
Yes, a movie I think that you will undoubtedly enjoy, and I'll also be reviewing The Happy Prince, which I must recommend, with Rupert Everett as Oscar Wilde.
Oscar Wilde as opposed to Jurassic Park? I'm shocked.
Jurassic Park is coming.
Hope so too. And of course there's The Linkage Show. More of that in a matter of moments. By the way, we've only got an answer. Is Phil going to honeymoon at the Linkage Show?
Oh, are you, Phil? Have you decided?
I think a full year. I mean, you know, that's always been my plan, was to honeymoon as artists in residence at the university.
There you go. Marvellous. Richard Fitzwilliams and Phil Leonis, we salute you. Would you like to introduce Lungs, please, Chloe, as she's co-hosting Sound and Country Vision this evening at 7?
She is. Yeah, so this is Chloe Rose with her brand new single, Lungs.
Breathe in, breathe out.
12 days, 15 hours, 7 minutes and 50 seconds, Ian. 12 days, 15 hours, 7 minutes and 42 seconds, Ian. Do you know what we're counting down to?
World Cup.
No, that's going to be happening a little bit sooner. We were already today.
It is, yes, I'm sorry.
Yeah, exactly, the week on Thursday.
No, I don't know then.
You don't know? No, indeed.
Not my next date, is it?
Ian, please keep your personal and professional
separate.
I know,
separate. I do hope.
Remember, the cats are listening. 12 days, 15 hours, 6 minutes and 51 seconds until Gemma.
The Lincolnshire Show.
Yay!
Oh my goodness. How could I miss that?
Again, spoken like a true Tyneside, Ian. Quite rightly so. I know today excitement in Yorkshire because Bramham has officially launched. We did the countdown yesterday for the Bramham International Horse Trials. But yep, with 12 hours, 15 hours, 6 minutes and 8 seconds to go. It's happening. Tickets are on sale. Ian, you've yet to make it to the Lincolnshire Show. One day you're going to actually arrive and you can actually listen to Chloe Rose in person. By the way, Gemma, is that the first time you've actually heard Chloe Rose?
It was actually. Yeah.
What did you think of the lass who's going to be performing on stage at the Lincolnshire Show and will be one of our celebrity tweeters?
Yeah, I'm really excited to hear her sing. And
she's Miss Lincolnshire
hopefully.
As well, you see.
Yeah.
Miss Lincolnshire sash that works through from that sort of point of view, so very good. Emma?
Very excited as well. I think she's very dramatic. That song was very dramatic, you know. It was really good. I liked it.
Well, Tessa has officially sort of said, yes, Chloe Rose is okay, sorted.
So she's very energetic, isn't she? She's got a lot of energy. She'll be good for the
force of nature, exactly. it's great stuff there. And Christian, your thoughts on somebody you were probably working with insofar as Chloe Rose? Is it a case of, I can't stand your song, Chloe, just sort it out?
No, I liked it. No, if she's performing live at Lincolnshire, so yeah, definitely give her a watch.
Oh, there we are. See. That's just one of the reasons. Now, we've looked at some of the other fantastic things that are actually there. Tessa, I seem to recall actually a one Lincolnshire show 2 years ago. You took some knitting away. Have you ever progressed with that?
I haven't. I've still got the yarn. I found it. I came across it the other day. I was clearing some things out.
Is it next to the Arthur Weingarten book? Sorry.
Oh, and that as well. You will get the book back.
It's okay.
I promise. I promise.
The.
Yes,
the,
I've still got the yarn of wool. It's just too nice to use. It just sits there.
Yeah, but it because I mean, if you're not into animals, there are so many wonderful things that actually even a Newcastle United supporter like Ian Lennox could probably find something to do at the Lincolnshire Show. Will we be graced by the Cowley brothers at all this time around?
Yeah, they are coming. So we've got Lincoln City Football Club will have a big stand there where they'll be unveiling their new kit as well.
And possibly seeing.
Did they win promotion?
No, Ian. They lost to Exeter, which, in deference to Stephanie Romoshevsky, I didn't even mention when she was actually on air because I thought you step away from that. Oh. And anyway, Exeter lost in the final as well to Coventry City for the playoff final. So that's it. I could go back to talking about pain to Christian's experience of the European Cup final. Interesting enough, Christian, Chloe's also a Liverpool supporter, major Jurgen Klopp fan.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's
been a good week down there,
then. But on the plus side, Leeds have sacked their manager, so you know it's good from that point of view. So it's good.
Dad won't be happy then.
Well, he might be. I mean, actually,
well,
Ian will attest to, Leeds United and managers, it's usually every 5 or 6 months.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it is.
There's more casualties in Leeds United than the FAS.
Yeah, it's very, very true.
Or the people proposing them.
Anyway, Ollie and Obo, two names that Tessa is well associated with, Christian less so, and Emma and Gemma. No idea whatsoever about your cats. No. How are they, Ian?
Pardon?
How are your cats, Ian?
They're out and they've had their breakfast and they're out and about.
Good. That's what we like to hear. So great
so
news.
Rusty when they're asleep.
And do you mow your lawn, Ian?
My role is to provide for them.
Yeah. No, do you mow... You see, this is the language difference between a Tynesider, we're the lads, and a currently based in Lincoln from Teesside. Ian, do you mow your lawn?
Oh, yes, occasionally.
Because there is an art to mowing one's lawn.
Once every Christmas, I think about.
Right. Well, William Sitwell, ace gastronomic guru and a general all-round wonderful soul, who has also yet to be to the Lincolnshire Show. He's been in Lincoln several times. He promotes, obviously, his Northampton show extensively. He's the editor for Waitrose magazine. We try every year, but he's going to talk about the art to mowing one's lawn. In the second part of the programme, we'll find out more about how you can deal with energy bills. And we'll be talking about death, Ian. Oh, sorry, that's not meant to connect with you in any way, shape, or form. But Generation Death, apparently, is Generation Z, Generation Z, breaking the last taboo. Almost three quarters of over 65s have never raised the subject of death with their mother, while 79% admit to never having had the conversation with their father. Indeed, almost two-thirds of 18 to 25-year-olds say they've never actually had a conversation about mortality, apart from saying the idea of death is scary. Gemma, I mean, working at Lincolnshire Showground, surely death is an everyday sort of part of your existence.
Hopefully not, no.
And Emma?
I think I've spoken about it before, but not put much.
Not on a regular basis.
No, not really.
It's okay. We won't work that. Tessa, are you sort of thinking about mortality?
I mean, I don't really know. About like to graduate, to think you think about it's it.
You know, go to school, go to college, university, graduate, die.
I guess that's how it goes, but I don't really like to think about it if I can help it. I
mean, of course, we might already be in the afterlife now. I mean, people have said siren radio, it's just like being in heaven, so or listening to it. I mean, Ian being one of those. Christian?
It's a bit morbid for 9 o'clock in the morning. Isn't
that's
it?
That's why we're waiting until 9:45 to actually
yeah,
do
oh,
that.
Oh, God, yeah, yeah. Give yourself 45 minutes to prepare.
Exactly. Change that round in the schedule. It's all good stuff. More on the Lincolnshire Show. We talked about the RAF 100. That's going to be a great event. I know Ben Lewis, who's back with us on the programme next week, is devastated that he's actually not able to actually attend that side of things there. It's a commemoration of RAF 100. And Ian, you'll be pleased to know that this explores aviation heritage in Bomber County, of course, with a display of World War I and World War II model aircraft and exhibits, including a replica Spitfire, a real Merlin engine, and a period fire engine.
Didn't they have some airfields there for the Battle of Britain?
Sure. We've got that. We've also got, of course, the home of the Dam Busters. You might have heard of the sort of Guy Gibson thing that worked through. Exactly.
Guy Gibson was only 25 when he led that raid.
Exactly. Yeah. It just goes to show.
Amazing, isn't it? What we were doing when we were 25.
Well, I was doing my master's degree, I think, at that stage. I know. Really? Oh, well, there we are. Anyway, it's all part and parcel of the rich tapestry. Gemma and Emma, you've had the authentic edition of Richard Fitzwilliam's Phil Dearness, Ian Lennox, and Stephanie Romoshevsky, have you felt the first hour's okay? Is now that's under your belt, sort of through.
Excellent.
We'll proceed ever onwards into the second hour after the news. Go, Tessa. Put those last two questions to Ian, please.
Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today?
Yes, very short, but very pleased.
Short but sweet. And will you be returning next week?
I hope so.
And brilliant. Next week is when the World Cup actually starts, Ian. So, you know, that's
he'll have
Thursday.
A lot to say then.
You know,
that's
the but you can obviously watch England-Costa Rica today, because that's sort of the last friendly international that Gareth and the lads actually has. So, yes, so that's something to a treat to look forward to.
Still got my telly now, then.
Well, it takes place at Elland Road, so hopefully they won't sack Gareth Southgate by mistake.
Well, they'll probably all get the sack by the time they're on. 90 minutes of them.
There is that message. Happy trails, Ian. See you soon.
Cheers, man.
FM. Online. Mobile. This is. This.